It's time for Culture Shocks with your host, Barry Lynn.
All right, and welcome to today's edition of Culture Shocks. This is Barry Lynn. What a conundrum this is. What a conundrum. You are listening to this radio show, possibly listening to the podcast version of it or the over-the-air version of it. But by definition, if you're listening to this, you at least have some respect for the media. I mean, that you must respect this show enough to continue to listen to it. A lot of people have given up, well, virtually on the entirety of the media. They don't read newspapers. They don't trust anything except the most right or the most left website. They might tune into that, take a look at what the headlines are every morning. My guest today is Jonathan Ladd. He's a professor, assistant professor at Georgetown University in both their Public Policy Institute and the Department of Government. He's come out with a very interesting book of research called Why Americans Hate the Media and How It Matters. John, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks so much. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, let's start with the media and how much people really dislike it. It used to be that people really liked the media. They liked people like the late Walter Cronkite a lot. In fact, they liked them a lot more than politicians, ministers, used car salesmen. Not so much anymore. What's the data about our respect for the media in the past and where it's declined today?
Well, it's important to talk to specify exactly what types of media people dislike more than they used to.
Okay.
It's the media in general, or the media as an institution, which people dislike a lot more than they used to. And you'll get the same for responses no matter which way you ask the question. And what they mean when they say that is conventional sources of news, and that what they tend to be thinking about is network news broadcasts, major newspapers, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. There's a lot less trust of that than there used to be. So, I mean, I give some examples in the book. The General Social Survey in 1973, when it started, it's a big sociological survey
right.
every 2 years, and they've asked people every year how much confidence they have in the press. That's their question wording. And when they started in 1973, only 15% of people had said they had no trust in the press at all. Well, hardly any was the word.
Huh.
Hardly any trust in the press.
Okay.
And now almost half of people do.
Wow.
In 2008, almost half of people say they have hardly any. People now distrust the media in general, the institutional media, some people call it the mainstream media, a lot more than they did before. But there are sources that they do trust. So going along with that,
mm-hmm.
People do, you know, have more specialized, often more partisan sources that they do now say they trust for information. It's just there's no one source that a lot of people trust. You know, everyone
in other
trusts
words,
their own different source.
Yeah, and we were talking to a guest just a few days ago about some of this, and this idea of self-selection. We watch what confirms our own, beliefs, to put it politely, biases otherwise. And I imagine if you took a sample of self-identified conservatives and said, well, do you trust Fox News? They would say, well, yes. They would not give it a 50% rating. They might give it an 80% rating. Do they do surveys like that?
Yes. Pew does a number of surveys like that. And you do find that people tend to – people do tend to say they trust the particular outlet that they choose to tune into. But interestingly enough, as the media has gotten more fragmented, people still have strong opinions about the institutional media. In many ways, one thing they argue is that it's become more consequential, actually, because people constantly have to choose whether they want to consume news from conventional news outlets or from newer, more partisan, sometimes more sensationalist news outlets all the time. And so you might think as the media gets more fragmented and there are more choices, people wouldn't think about the media as an institution or wouldn't have a strong opinion about that.
Right.
And actually, it's the opposite. People have really strong opinions about whether they should, whether they feel like they want to consume conventional media or alternative media. And there are still people who like, who trust the conventional media.
No, absolutely.
And can consume it. I mean, it's 50% of people have, you know, almost 50%, 45% in 2008. They have hardly any, and close to 50% now, hardly any trust in the conventional press. But a lot of people do.
And the
so
people
it's a
who,
big divide between people who are getting sources from conventional news from conventional sources and people who are using it from partisan sources.
All right. Well, now, you argue, though, in the book Why Americans Hate the Media and How It Matters, that this way of consuming the news, the difference between now and, say, the early 1970s, actually has an effect on the way, perhaps even, that we vote. How's that?
Yeah, so it does. And the American political system has gotten a lot more polarized since the 50s, 60s, and early 70s in a lot of ways. And in many ways, that's also a cause of distrust of the press, right? But distrust of the press then has this consequence of making the public more polarized in their beliefs and then in their voting. So I think the beliefs is really what's driving it. So let me talk about that first. So
sure.
There's this phenomena that probably isn't too surprising to our listeners, that people of different parties in the United States now disagree not just about opinions, but about actual facts.
Right.
So, for example, you know, when Clinton was president, if you asked people, actually, has the economy gotten better or worse since Clinton took office? And there are statistics from this, so that, you know, whatever you think about your opinion on the policies, they're just asking you if things have gotten better or worse.
Sure.
So Democrats thought things had gotten better, and Republicans thought things had gotten relatively worse than Democrats thought, right? You ask
sure.
things about even objective things like just the inflation rate, how has it changed, or just the unemployment rate. And other things like that, are we safer from foreign enemies, and all these sort of questions you get, which are not asking your opinion, but just how are things going.
Exactly.
Partisans disagree. And the same thing under Bush, actually, under Bush, Republicans thought things were going relatively better. Democrats thought things were going relatively worse. So we have that trend, and that is more extreme among people who say they distrust the conventional press.
Well, now, in some of these instances, are we safer? That is, to some degree, measurable. You can say, well, how many times have we been attacked? How many times have airliners been hijacked? You can measure that.
Yeah.
But you can certainly measure inflation. That is factual. And it was about a decade ago when people in a Washington Post poll, I believe, said that they thought that the inflation rate was then at double digits. Well, it's not. It wasn't then. It's certainly not now.
It hasn't been since the early 80s, I think.
No, but I mean, if you go into your employer and you say, you know, I want a raise because I can't deal with 10 and 12% inflation, you're lucky to keep the job you have. So it has a very practical effect, but there still is sense that facts are really facts, but there's a persistence of belief that, in a sense, it transcends the facts. It's like, don't bother me with the facts. I have my own opinion. That's scary.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, we could talk about, you know, what the consequences are. I mean, some people would argue on the other side that, well, as long as there are some people evaluating politicians based on the actual facts. You know, the swing voters, if the swing voters are always
evaluating
incumbents based on whether things are actually better or not, the election will come out, you know, will reward incumbents for good performance and punish them for bad performance anyway, even if most of everybody else has these partisan beliefs regardless. But it is really interesting, and it can be, you know, it's not unreasonable to be worried. There's research not by me, but other political scientists, Mark Meredith at University of Pennsylvania and some others, that find that these partisan perceptions, people aren't just saying them on the survey. People actually,
behavior actually
reflect.
Yeah, they reflect. In other words, they do go to their employer and tell him about double-digit inflation. When we come back, more with Jonathan Ladd, Georgetown University. The book is Why Americans Hate the Media and How It Matters. I'm going to tell you about a test I took just last night. We'll be back. All right, we are back right here on Culture Shocks. We're again exploring this question of why people seem to dislike the media so much and why people persist in believing things that are clearly false and how much that's related to the media they choose to consume. My guest is Jonathan Ladd. He's the author of the book Why Americans Hate the Media and How It Matters. He's an assistant professor over at Georgetown University in both their Public Policy Institute and its Department of Government. So, John, here's the test I took. Before I even opened your book last night, but you see, this is good because some people, I hate to tell you this, who will interview you have not opened your book. I mean, they don't open my books either. That's not nothing about your books. It's just people get swamped. But I ask myself the question. I look at the title, Why Americans Hate the Media. It's a very provocative cover. It's got these newspaper vending machines, and then over certain of them, it looks like it's painted or spray painted the word lies, lies. I said, well, why does Barry Lynn hate the media? And then I realized I don't actually hate the media, but I am profoundly disappointed in the media. And so I came up with about a half a dozen things that really bother me. And I wonder, to what degree do you find in the research, either you do or you've reviewed, other people saying the same kind of thing? Here's what bothers me about network news. You know, the news that is 22 minutes and 26 seconds, the so-called half-hour news on the major networks. I hate the fact that there is so little analysis and that we basically only get conclusions. In other words, let's say there's a debate on the budget and somebody decides we're going to propose a tax cut for the wealthy, and in fact it passes one house. Then you will find on the network news a Democrat saying, this is a terrible decision. It only makes the rich get richer. It will not help middle America. Then you will find a Republican who voted for this tax cut for the wealthy who say, you know, this is exactly the kind of real stimulus we need because this will help every American as more and more jobs are created. Now, those two statements, diametrically opposed in their conclusions, are only conclusions. There's no second question like, why do you think that's true? Because there's not enough time. And no, therefore, we get conclusions, not analysis. That is not the way to learn anything.
Yes, I think that is a style, the he said, she said style of reporting.
Yeah.
It's a style that is annoying to a lot of people. The only modification I would make to completely agreeing with you on that is that when I tried to test whether those sort of things, so those sort of, I didn't specifically test those, but in experiments I would try to test, for example, coverage of the horse race or that sort of thing.
Right.
Most people, it didn't really affect their opinion of the press very much. What did affect their opinion of the press was when the press didn't talk about politics much at all. And people seem to, there's a lot of evidence people seem to tune into that. It doesn't hurt ratings, but people trust the media as an information source.
Sure.
If the media is covering more celebrities, more actors and actresses, you know, the analog now would be like the Kardashians.
Right.
If you remind people about that, there's no reason to think it doesn't help get ratings. People trust the media less. The press, I don't think there's been a long-term trend of the press increasingly over time using this he said, she said sort of format.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, a lot of political scientists have found that reporters sort of what they call indexing, sort of they cover the conservative or liberal side of an issue in the exact proportion to which those sides are being represented in Washington by
exactly.
Washington politicians,
exactly.
Right? Not exactly. Not really in proportion to whatever the truth is necessarily. This is an idea called indexing that Robert Entman from University of Washington has talked about for a while.
And it's done particularly in regard to science. If you have a discussion about evolution where 99.9% of scientists are on one side, but there are a couple of people, you know, off on the fringe, You will often see the two of them together in these news clips as if it was a 50-50 split over, you know, the view of biologists in America.
Yeah, I think was it Paul Krugman often uses the saying that he thinks if you know, if there was a dispute on the media about the shape of Earth, the headline would be "Shape of Earth: Views Differ." Right? So, I mean, that's something a lot of people get upset about. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of political scientists who hope that the media actually helps people make reasonable decisions think that the saving grace is what they call retrospective voting. Sort of like people aren't people don't always get enough information to really judge politicians based on issues and which issues is right, which issue one or the other are right. But they hope, and there's a lot of evidence that they do, reward and punish based on whether foreign wars are going well or poorly or whether they won. There's a lot of evidence that presidents are punished if there are a lot of casualties that the American forces are facing in whatever engagement they're into, and that if the economy is doing poorly, incumbents in Congress and in the presidency are punished. So, and that's why, and a lot of political scientists cling to that as one way that it's seemingly democracy works despite all these bad trends in media and these things of he said, she said.
Exactly.
And that's why I sort of concentrate on that in the book and think, well, this is a really important thing because we know that voters do it, the reward and punish.
Yep.
And to what extent might changing levels of trust in the media affect this?
Exactly.
And it's to prevent that. Because people distrust the press and thus don't really respond to real-world events. So that's one thing I find. You mentioned voting. That because people's beliefs are more partisan, they respond to the facts when they actually vote, when they retrospectively vote, a lot less than they would otherwise. And that's worrisome because that's the thing political scientists for a long time have said, well, voters can't do this and this. They're not good at, you know, voting based on issues because not everyone thinks really ideologically and they don't get information well that really gets them helps them do that, but they can retrospectively reward and punish incumbents. And they still do that, but to the degree that that's hurt, that's worrisome.
When we come back, we're going to continue the conversation with Professor Jonathan M. Ladd. He's the author of Why Americans Hate the Media. I'll get back to my little test. And not only, clearly, people get upset when they think the news media is covering too much of the Kardashians and too little of, you know, Rick Santorum's, at least at the momentary, rise to power within the Republican primary debate. But there's a lot that passes for news that I would say is simple opinion. It is nothing more. And it bugs me, and we'll find out if anybody else cares about it when we come back with Jonathan Ladd. You're listening to Culture Shocks. I'm your host, Barry Lynn. All right, we're back, and we're talking to Professor Jonathan Ladd here on Culture Shocks, Why Americans Hate the Media and How It Matters, out from Princeton University Press. Professor Ladd is a professor at Georgetown University, and we're talking about the media and a little test I gave myself. Why do I have extreme disappointment in the media? Another thing, John, that bothers me is what passes for news is often nothing more than opinion, as in, so how will Mitt Romney do in Georgia next month? Now, a lot of the people who pontificate on this are personal friends of mine, Rich Galen, Paul Begala, Chris Matthews, all those people. However, and there is a kind of patina of historical trends they live through. They know more than perhaps somebody, obviously a little more than somebody picked out at random from the phone book. But on the other hand, some of this really almost sounds like you hired a psychic and put her or him on the show to talk about Georgia. Because in fact, nobody knows who's going to win anything. And in fact, even the public opinion polls until you get 2 days out aren't very helpful. This bugs me enormously because opinions, although interesting, tend to be repetitive and they don't really tell me anything.
Well, there's a couple of questions that you mentioned. One is, you know, predictions by pundits. And there's actually some research into this that finds that predictions by pundits tend to be, you know, no better than predictions by anybody else.
Sad.
I think one of the one of the ways to think about this is that people who tune into CNN shows on CNN or even MSNBC or Fox News tend to be people who enjoy politics for its own sake. I think enjoy following politics. They also have a strong, you know, opinion about how things, with how they hope things should come out. But the pundit guessing game and prediction game, they put on there because my take always on it is that the people who watch find it entertaining. maybe you don't find it entertaining.
No.
But I mean, there's a group, and it's a relatively small group of the public overall that watches cable shows and cable news. I should say.
Yeah, because they watch cable wrestling. I mean, when people Bill O'Reilly and all those guys at Fox say, you know, we're the most highly rated news coverage, and from day to day or week to week, they usually are. But wrestling is beating them, and I think that's something people need to put in perspective.
Yes, the ratings for all cable news channels is a lot smaller than people in politics often think. And the people who tune in to these sort of shows tend to be people whose opinion is already made up.
Mm-hmm.
So not a lot of people are actually persuaded one way or another by these shows. To a large degree, it does reinforce people's predispositions, and they do get informed about new issues and learn learn about new issues and often learn, you know, where their party is going on that
issue. Well, now, that's a very important point. Let me tell you, I may be a weirdo, but this is what I do. I don't mind real balance. I like that. If maybe we'll get a chance to talk about it. A lot of people, I think, do like balance. If I'm in a hotel, when I go to Indianapolis and I'm in a hotel on Friday night before I speak somewhere on Saturday, I'm going to tune into CNN right away. As soon as the plane lands, I get to the hotel, turn it on. Then I'm going to immediately turn it to Fox. Why? Mm-hmm. Not because I'm a conservative, but because I need to know. It's more important for me to know what the enemy thinks than how someone is spinning what I already believe. And this, to me, also goes to your question of the new issues. Mm-hmm. I'm going to know what they think they're going to be promoting. That's important because it might not be the same story covered by CNN, certainly maybe not by MSNBC, but it's going to be part of the water cooler debate. It's what people are going to want to talk about on the radio.
I have to say that I sometimes do the same thing at, you know, in a hotel or at home. I will be interested to see how an issue is covered on Fox as opposed to CNN or MSNBC. Mm. But I have to say, we are unusual.
Yes. Well, the weirdo caucus,
do
you might say. Yeah. Okay, so they don't do it, and there's statistics to back that up.
Well, yeah, in that, well, it's a small percentage of the public that watches cable news at all.
Of course.
And then of those that do, most aren't intentionally trying to get a sense of how media coverage of each differs. There's a lot of evidence, partially in my book and from a lot of other media scholars recently, that the increasing amount of news options means that people are ideologically self-selecting a lot more, and they have the option to do this. So, I mean, you can integrate that with my story by saying that, right, now people have this choice of either consuming news from more conventional news sources or from these newer, more partisan sources. And their trust in the mainstream press determines whether they're going to go with the mainstream press or go with partisan sources.
Right.
And if they go with partisan sources, then largely their partisanship is going to determine if they're going to pick Republican sources or Republican-leaning sources or Democratic or more Democratically-leaning sources. Yeah, and there increasingly aren't that many people who are like you and I.
No. Well, how about the people who might say, you know, give me something engaging, you know, and I'm going to watch it. I used to do a lot of those Bill Buckley firing line specials, 2 hours, three or four people in each side, unedited, totally unedited, raw stuff in front of live audiences. A lot of people watched it. I mean, those are pretty big deals to do them, and the numbers came in, and people would actually review them. You know, TV critics would review them. But there is not a single venue like that. If you have a debate on Fox News, the last time they asked me to come on Fox News was 6:30 in the morning to discuss Veggie Tales, which are Christian Bible stories told by talking vegetables.
I said,
no, thank you, unless you're going to do it. I'll sit in my bed like John and Yoko Ono, and you can film me there. But where's the venue for that? And if it existed, would people watch it? Because at least they'd have their ideas supported, but also challenged.
Well, I think it would be nice if those things existed, and they don't exist as much anymore. Although you do find websites where there are interesting debates and those sort of things, but I think it would be nice if they existed more. If they did exist, though, I think it's easy for us to overestimate how many people in the public at large who are actually vulnerable to persuasion or don't have fixed political beliefs going in might tune in. I mean, I think the people who would tune in would be people really interested in political ideas and debating those political ideas, and I think that's completely worthwhile.
Yep.
And I would enjoy listening to those things.
Sure.
The percentage of people in the public who would tune in, right, would be small. It's a percentage of the whole public.
Exactly.
And those who tune in would mostly be people who are interested in those issues, and because they have learned so much already and are so well-informed, probably already have a fairly well-formed opinion on most political issues.
Yeah, and
it's
the
really,
difference...
I mean, it's with the paradox of media and public opinion, right, is that people who consume the most media are least vulnerable to influence.
Exactly.
People who are most easily influenced and more open to having their opinion changed are people who don't follow politics much other things in their lives and aren't very interested.
Got to take a little break here, John. But the difference between, and I agree with what you just said, sadly, political debates in the Republican primaries, for example, are different because the measure is not simply what people say, but also how they say it. It's much more, I'd argue, personality-driven, and that's why those debates maybe did make a difference in, say, the South Carolina primary, which Newt Gingrich won. We'll be back with Professor Jonathan Ladd in a minute, Why Americans Hate the Media. All right, and we are back right here on Culture Shocks. I'm your host, Barry Lynn. Jonathan Ladd, professor at Georgetown University in his Department of Government, is with us about his new book, Why Americans Hate the Media and How It Matters. A basic argument here, if I can summarize it, which usually distorts it, of course, it's that the things we believe as citizens and our voting behavior now more than in the past are shaped by certain dispositions, predispositions that are very partisan, and those in no small measure tend to grow out of our own selection of the media. We like it our way. We want to hear our ideas reinforced, and that's what we go to. So, John, let's talk a little bit about what we could do to do away with, or at least limit some of this hatred that is unjustified. Justice Scalia, with whom I rarely agree, did say something when someone in a public speech moaned about the Citizens United decision and, you know, all this money going into ads by super PACs and all the money that's being spent by candidates. And he said, and essentially he said, you know, quit griping about it. You don't like those political commercials? Turn the channel. Well, I was in Florida during the Florida primary. If you turned the channel, you would see the identical ad sponsored by the super PAC or the candidate. But a part of me agrees with something that he said, and that is that maybe if you're really turned off, you ought to turn it out of your mind and just say, you know, I just assume it's all nonsense, it's spin, it's lies, and just get your information somewhere else.
Well, I think we shouldn't think that in agreeing with you, I think that we shouldn't think that the solution is restricting people's free choices.
Right,
You know, people's choices were limited in the 1950s and 1960s for basically two reasons that neither reason are coming back, and we shouldn't hope that they will. So the one reason is technologically, mm-hmm. right? The internet didn't exist, cable news didn't exist.
Right.
And the other was legally. We had the Fairness Doctrine until the mid-80s, which limited the ability to have sort of opinionated radio shows.
No, not quite. I'd have to disagree about that. But I know where you're going. The point is that it was structured in such a way that it looked different from today.
Yes. And so my take is, right, we shouldn't try to restrict the amount of options people have, and
right.
people's freedom to consume news and get news that if they want, whose partisanship they agree with, we shouldn't be entirely scared of. I mean, it's more of the actually historical norm than what we had in the 50s and 60s. So I spent a good time in the book talking about, you know, that we had a lot of this in the 1800s with opinionated and even some very sensationalist newspapers, newspapers of Joseph Pulitzer and William Randolph Hearst. Even right after the founding of the country, we had very partisan newspapers and no sort of central, well-trusted institutional press during the Washington administration. The Federalists sponsored the Gazette of the United States to get their partisan opinion out that was pro-Hamilton and John Adams and pro-Washington, and the opposition – Thomas Jefferson's Democratic Republicans, the opposition, sponsored a lot of their own partisan, opinionated,
very,
papers,
very
including
blunt.
The National Gazette and the Aurora, the Philadelphia General Advertiser
That's
called
right.
the Aurora. So this is not new. So I think we want to think about the era going forward when people have lots of choices. There are a lot of partisan media out there and a lot of sensationalist media out there. How are we going to make sure people still, especially people who decide elections, still learn some of the facts about how the country's doing? So it's things that aren't opinions, but are we actually in a badly run and disastrous overseas war or not?
Mm-hmm.
Is the economy actually tanking or not? So can people actually learn this information? And this isn't one of those books that says I have all the answers. I think all of the potential reforms have drawbacks, but I suggest that, you know, one of the conventional style media sources that people still do trust and that actually has been doing fairly well is especially public radio.
Yes.
People trust public television as well, although it has never had the same rating success public radio does.
No.
But still, I think to make sure that conventional style news is still an option for people and doesn't go away, it's important to continue. It's important to continue to support public radio and public television so that we never get in a situation where no one is reporting the facts without a partisan perspective.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
I also say that, you know, I think it's a more untried idea and has some potential drawbacks, but I think the government could do more to professionalize the dissemination of information about how things are doing and how the economy is doing and how overseas wars are doing. I mean, the government does a lot of things very professionally, and there are a lot of sort of nonpartisan professional people working in all sorts of the government, in the military, in the
Federal
Reserve,
there's a congressional,
all sorts of agencies across Washington. There's no reason the government can't get more aggressive in making informing the public. I mean, that's probably the most controversial recommendation.
Yeah, well, it's controversial because of the same reason that people don't trust whoever is, you know, reading the news on CBS. It's because they don't trust the government. I mean, or half the people don't trust the government. So to professionalize it is just to give it a veneer of respectability, they would say, it does not deserve. But again, well, how about a third party doing it? You know, their papers in Atlanta and other places, the old St. Petersburg Times had a fact check. They still have it, a column. It's now called the Tampa Times, but it's a fact check column. The Washington Post has the Pinocchio column where they look at an assertion made by some political figure and then they give that assertion 1 to 4 Pinocchios, indicating the level of lie that they consider that assertion to be. Is that going to be helpful, or do people go, Tampa Times, man, I don't trust those people. They're part of the liberal media.
I think in theory, oftentimes it's executed badly, but in theory, fact checks are helpful, at least do no harm.
Right.
I think they're good. They're good, and they help a little bit. You have the problem that, you know, they're often not going to get out to the sort of people you want to reach, because the people who are really undecided and swing voters in elections are the sort of the marginal political viewer who gets a little political information, enough to vote and get involved, but is not a political junkie. Right. So those are the type of people who swing back and forth in elections. They're not. There are very few fact checks that will, you know, get out and actually be absorbed by those sort of folks in the public as a whole.
Of course.
But, I mean, I think it's a good idea, and I don't think it hurts. I mean, occasionally you get fact checkers that, you know, fact check organizations that say absurd things and don't actually accurately check
exactly.
back. But, and yet you know examples of that.
Of course,
but that's
of course.
Another issue, yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a final thought about much of this is research. It's hard data. That's why I like this book a lot. It's got a lot of hard data. But just to turn to you as a speculator for a second, 20 years from now, is the media likely to have done something that gives it a little better sense that it is approved by the public, or at least most of the public, in a way that it was in the early 70s? Or do you see a continued decline as we continue to be so highly partisan about everything?
Well, I'm not optimistic that the media, the institutional media, will necessarily be more trusted. But I do try to be optimistic that we'll find ways to inform the public despite that, and get information out despite that. Either it's by supporting public television and public radio or through finding other ways to get facts out to a broader range of the public, get facts out to ordinary people, not just political junkies.
No, exactly. And, of course, to the extent that people are willing to look at their beliefs and as has been said by a few, when the facts do seem to, come in not on your side, you might want to even think which side you ought to be on. And there are people in academia and in the news who actually change their opinions. I want to thank you, Professor Jonathan M. Ladd, author of Why Americans Hate the Media and How It Matters. Good ideas, good research. You might want to take a look at it from Princeton University Press. That does it for today's edition of Culture Shocks. I'm Barry Lynn, and we will talk again.
This edition of Culture Shocks has been produced by Diane Robinson, engineered by Dwayne Davis, and the Genesis Communication Network technical staff. Visit us online at cultureshocks.com.